Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
And today we're fairly certain is, in fact, Friday. I was very confident when I came downstairs into the basement to do the show. And now I hear the opening of, hey, today it's Friday. And now I feel more confident. Yeah, more confident than ever that today, in fact, is Friday. So with that being said, Chris Canty, happy Friday. Good Friday to you.
Good Friday to you, Dave Rothenberg. How you feeling?
I'm feeling okay. I'm about to start dipping into Ozark, so I'm excited about that, and I will.
It's about time.
Yeah, no, I know, but you know what? And I don't know if you ever feel like this. I felt like I was oversaturated with the show because I watched two straight seasons very recently, and I felt like I needed a little bit of a break. But now all the social media hubbub about how great it's been and the ending is so dynamic, I feel like I'm ready to get back involved.
Well, you see, Dave, that's good for you because you actually have a governor. You can actually cut it off and step away from it. See, when I start a series or a season, it just feels like I got to go all the way through until the last episode. So that leads to a lot of binge watching. I actually watched season 3 of Ozark in one weekend, the entire season.
I think I'm going to do the same thing. Now, Rick, how do you feel about that? You ever get so ensconced in a show that you need to just step back and just, you know, take a little time and then get back involved?
No, I'm like Canty. Yeah, I mean, in my younger days when Cassie and I didn't have kids, I mean, once we made a commitment, we were all in. Like, I wanted to rewatch The Godfathers, so we started one, and then before we knew it, we were through all three of them.
That's terrific, though.
No, it was amazing.
The Godfathers.
I mean, one and two. Are you kidding me?
One and two. Oh.
I mean, it's beautiful. The longer this thing goes on, I may actually go back and watch one and two again. How about that?
I think you should. I don't think you will.
I think you'll do it.
I'd like to challenge you to that. I will give you until, what's today? April 17th. I will give you 3 weeks from today. Chris, you're witness here. 3 weeks from today, which is what, May 8th, I guess, to rewatch both The Godfather and Part 2. I don't care about 3 because it's awful. So the first two.
Wow.
It's terrible. Someone's got to say it. The first two Godfathers by May 8th. I don't think you'll do it.
I'm going to make them an offer again with you.
No, I'm going to do it. I'll have to do it in 30-minute increments, but I'll do it. All in combined, I'll have watched both.
But 100%. You can't sit and watch 30-minute baby bits of The Godfather. You have to watch The Godfather.
I'm going to watch what I can watch. Whatever I can keep my eyes open to watch, I'm going to watch. And then once they close and I'm staring at my eyelids, then I'll pause it and then go back to it. This is my life now, Dave. I've learned to accept it.
As long as Dave doesn't have any quiz at the end of it about everything that happened within the movie, you should be fine. If it's just a matter of turning on the television and being in front of the television while it's on, then yeah, I think he'll absolutely knock that out in 3 weeks.
But that's not what we want. We don't want him to just sit there and, like, as a school assignment, watch The Godfather. We want you to take it in. We want you to ingest it. We want you to re-fall in love with one of the great films, two of the great films in the history of cinema.
Dave, he's got two kids under 5. Good luck being able to have a 3-hour block that he's awake and just focus on The Godfather.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, too, just to sprinkle into the mix now, which is a beautiful treat for me, is that we have something in our bedroom. I don't know what it is. I have been unable to identify what it is.
What is it?
Just randomly in the middle of the night on its own just decides to vibrate and wake us up consistently.
What? Well, say that again.
Yeah, it's not what you're thinking. Don't use your Dave. If this was Dave, we'd say, hey, Sherry, take the batteries out of that thing. But that's not the case.
Don't lump me into your sadistic ways. All right? I have a perfectly normal life going on in the bedroom. Huh? Don't lump me in with your craziness.
Can't find it. Twice last night. It wasn't a pee. It was because that stupid vibrating woke me up again, and I can't find where it is.
Now, when the vibrating woke you up, did you then have to pee?
Yes, of course I had to pee. First, I glanced to my right just to make sure that she was still sleeping, and there was no funny business going on, and then I'm like, God, again it happens, and I can't find it.
That's wonderful. All right, so guys, lots of stuff for us to get into today. The NFL, the draft is now 6 days away. It's going to be on ESPN television, of course. It's going to be here on 98.7 ESPN, of course. Starts at 7 o'clock next Thursday. So it's here. Now, I guess we start with this, and we'll open up the phone lines to you guys as well, because I know Jamal Adams is always kind of a hot-button issue, 800-919-3776. I don't think it's that big of a deal, Chris, to you, that he's going to skip voluntary OTAs. I mean, it's voluntary. Obviously, he's unhappy. He wants a new deal. He's not going to show up for the computer-generated OTAs right now.
Well, I want to pump the brakes on this, Dave, because I know that Jamal Adams wants to be paid. He talked about it at the beginning of this offseason, how he doesn't view himself as just a safety. He's a playmaker. He's an impact guy on the defensive side of the ball, and he wants to be treated as such. Like, we talked about it after we saw the Eddie Jackson deal from the Chicago Bears. He got paid $14.5 million in new money on a contract extension. We knew that Jamal Adams was going to want a lot more money than that on an average annual value on an extension. But I think this is about one of the sides trying to create some time pressure in terms of being able to have some finality to the situation. I don't think we're going to get to that point, but I think you're starting to see a little bit of the friction between Jamal and the organization, just because he feels like he's exceeded the deal that he's on based on the production the last couple of years.
Well, he's absolutely done that. I mean, you want to talk about, I mean, the most impactful player on the New York Jets, it's Jamal. And I understand, you know, him wanting to be paid. I just don't know at this point, with what happened last season and, you know, Joe Douglas picking up the phone and entertaining some trades, Dallas being one of the teams involved in his, I mean, his willingness to want to be a Dallas Cowboy. I mean, clearly this is something, and the timing of this, I mean, screams that he's trying to put pressure on the Jets. And who knows if Joe Douglas is going to cave? I mean, he hasn't yet. I mean, with what he's done this offseason, he has a price that he wants to pay, and he's not going to budge from that. And let's remember, too, Jamal Adams isn't Joe Douglas's draft pick.
No, absolutely he's not. But, you know, they're going to have to make a decision. And I would think if you're going to move him, you're going to move him prior to or draft day. So I guess there's a chance, and Adam Schefter's reporting that don't be surprised if the Jets, you know, at least field calls on this right now. I guess there's a chance that you're in the final week of Jamal Adams' tenure with the New York Jets.
Well, here's the thing, Dave. I talked to somebody that knows people in his camp, and from what I understand, Jamal Adams doesn't want to leave the Jets, but it's clear that Jamal Adams does want a new deal, and I just don't know how that's going to get worked out. I don't know how you square that circle. If Joe Douglas and Adam Gase don't see the value in paying a safety $16, $17 million a year, then I think it's going to ultimately get to the point where they're going to have to part ways with Jamal Adams, but there's no telling when exactly that's going to happen. By this information coming out about him missing the virtual offseason, I mean, here's the thing. He's in his house. He's sheltering in place. If you decide you're not going to participate in the virtual offseason, then you're just trying to make it a point to let everybody know that you're unhappy with the state of affairs between you and the team, and you want something to be done about that. But I don't think the something that he wants done is to him actually getting traded. I think he actually just wants to get his money and continue to be one of the culture setters for the New York Jets. But we'll see what happens.
But it's, I mean, to your point though, Chris, I mean, for him, I mean, to do what he's doing, it's really a no-lose proposition. You got to imagine, right? If the ultimate goal is to get paid, I mean, if he gets traded, whatever team's trading for him realizes that's going to pay him anyway. So either the Jets pay him what he wants, or he gets traded to whoever it ends up being and they pay him. Huh? And if it's the Dallas Cowboys, it puts you in a better – I mean, that's where he's from. And on top of it, I mean, Dallas is talent-wise much closer to compete for a championship than the Jets are.
Oh, absolutely. Of course they are.
Yeah, but he'd be a nice finishing – he'd actually be a nice finishing piece for that Dallas Cowboys defense.
Wow.
Could you imagine that defense with LVE, Jalen Smith, Jamal Adams, and Tank Lawrence running around? I know Santiago can. He's sitting there staring off in space right now.
Of course he is. Of course he is. You think Santiago spends more than 4 hours a day just daydreaming about the Cowboys?
More than 4 hours? No, because, yeah. I mean, two of those 4 hours he's trolling the internet. I mean, he's on Twitter trolling and everything else.
Do you think there's anything that goes on in cyberspace that Santiago is not up and running with?
No, he's seen everything. I mean, he's the king of
every
he's the king of the retweet, with the emoji attached to it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, typically the crying emoji.
Yeah, crying emoji, laughing. Yeah, oh yeah. He absolutely loves the emojis.
All right, so I'm going to put you on the spot right now, Rick. It's your Jets. You love Jamal Adams. You love this team. So obviously keeping him makes you a better team, right? But here's the question for you. Is it worth $17 million a year, and is it worth locking into a safety long term? So here's the question I'm going to pose to you. I will offer you right now the 17th overall selection and a fourth round selection from the Dallas Cowboys in exchange for one Jamal Adams. You'll have them next Thursday, and you can reboot the team that way, or you can hang on to him, still draft 11, and try and organically build it the way you're trying to build it.
So give me that. Give me the trade parameters again quickly. I get the 17th pick.
You're going to get the 17th overall pick. That's where the Cowboys pick, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to sweeten it a little bit by giving you an additional pick of a fourth round selection as well.
Yeah, I'm going to take the deal.
You're going to take the deal.
I'm going to take the deal. I'm absolutely going to take the deal. And then I'm going to pick up the phone and I'm going to flirt with Jacksonville a little bit and see if they want to find
a little sexy talk for a pass rusher.
Yeah, a little sexy talk. Maybe lower my voice. Put on some easy listening and see if they want to talk. See if we can get ourselves one Yannick Ngakoue. Cause now all of a sudden, if I get the tackle, I mean, I could really solidify that offensive line. I get the tackle at 11. If I want to get silly and I get the wide receiver at 17 or more importantly, the corner at 17, and then I find a way to get Yannick Ngakoue and then I get my wide receiver in the second round, forget it.
Oh yeah. If you go tackle, corner, pass rusher via trade, and then a wide receiver in the second round. Yeah, you're cooking with hot grease, then.
Well, you can't get all that because you're gonna have to trade for Ngakoue.
Yeah, my first round pick next year because I'm gonna be
next
a playoff
year?
Team. Yeah, I'm gonna be a playoff team, and Jacksonville clearly doesn't want to be good, so they want to. If God forbid that what happens to Miami happens to them, and they they're not the worst team in the NFL with the number one pick, but there is a team that has a number one pick that already has a quarterback. Like, say maybe it's the Bengals are really bad again and they have the first overall pick. I want as much ammunition as humanly possible to get that first overall pick. So if I'm trying to be bad, I don't need the first round pick this year. I need the first round pick next year.
Right. Right. No, I agree. I always get nervous with that because you never know what your team's going to be. Like, if you trade 17, okay, you know exactly what it is. You know that you're trading 17. It's a valuable slot, but it's not like it's a top 10 pick.
Yeah, but
God forbid. Yeah.
Timeout. Yannick Ngakoue is 25 years old. The Colts just traded the 13th overall pick for DeForest Buckner. The 13th overall pick, right? So if the Jets do what they're supposed to do, you're going to have a middle of the first round pick. Are you going to find anyone in the middle of the first round that's as good or as productive as Yannick Ngakoue?
No, you wouldn't. I'm just saying, if I was the Jets, I'd prefer to trade a piece this year because you don't know what you're going to be. God forbid you're 4-12. God forbid Darnold gets hurt and fails has to be quarterback and you're 4-12 and you have the fifth pick in the draft or the third pick in the draft and now that goes to Jacksonville.
Yeah, but here's the thing though, but you know what this year's draft is and you know what your needs are. So if you feel like with the 11th overall pick you can address offensive tackle, with the 17th overall pick you can find a corner you desperately need. You get your edge pass rusher, and then you look at the other things that you need. You need wide receivers. Well, this is the deepest draft we've maybe ever seen with wide receiver. So now all of a sudden, because you have a clearer picture of this year's draft, I mean, you can fill all the spots that you need filled.
Yeah, and I think that would help out Adam Gase in a year where there's going to be pressure on him to get into the playoffs. I know that ownership won't come out and say it, but Adam Gase is absolutely got to have this team in the playoff picture once we get to December, especially when we know that they've expanded the playoffs from 12 to 14 teams, and you're going to be talking about 7 teams in the AFC getting in the tournament. So, to me, it makes sense if you're the Jets as an organization and you believe in the head coach to try to get as many of these holes filled as you possibly can before we kick off in September.
Well, that's spicy. Can you imagine if the Jets did that? How excited would you be? I mean, if we come on the airwaves before we do our big top 11 projections next Thursday, and the Jets have made a deal where they've gotten the Cowboys pick. And I think that would be one of those trades that both teams would win. I think that you could look at it from the Jets standpoint and say, that's a win. And from the Cowboys standpoint, say, that's a win as well. If I've given you 17, even if it's just 17, and then you go after Ngakoue and you get 11, 17, you have your second round pick, you trade next year's one, you better be a playoff team this year. But how excited do you think the Jets fan would be heading into the season if they did something like that?
I think initially you'd be upset. I think a lot of Jets fans would be initially upset just because they love Jamal Adams. I think every Jets fan loves Jamal Adams. But then, when you get an opportunity to see what the team looks like after the draft, I mean, you mentioned the second round pick, then you got the Giants third round pick. You got your own.
Yeah,
there's so much you'll be able to do in this year's draft. And when you look at the needs of this Jets team, you're going to get some really good players to fill those holes, especially at the wide receiver position.
Yeah. I mean, they have an opportunity to fill a lot of team needs, but I guess the one thing that I would say in just looking at this situation with Jamal on its face, I would be concerned if I'm a Jets fan about my head coach and his relationship with his players. Because when you have sticky situations like this where a guy is clearly outperform the deal that he's currently on, you have to lean on the relationship that the head coach has with the player in order to try to massage the situation and get it to a point where the status quo is something that the organization and the player can live with. And right now, it seems like we're teetering closer and closer to this being untenable with Jamal and the New York Jets. And now I just don't think that that's a place as a franchise you can afford to go with one of your star players, knowing that you're trying to set a culture and establish a new program.
But see, that's the one thing, Chris. See, that's the one thing, Dave and Chris. I mean, initially, like I said, you'd be upset, and then you're probably happy after you see where, you know, Joe Douglas uses the picks in the players that you get. But what concerns me the most is exactly what Chris just said, is you're talking about a head coach who didn't have good relationships with his players in Miami, and now all of a sudden, I think one of the biggest contributing factors to you trading Jamal Adams and not extending him is because of the gravitas he has in your locker room. And I don't think that's necessarily something Adam gets. It screams bad coach, bad relationships. It reminds me of, you know, why Bill O'Brien would trade DeAndre Hopkins. You know
yes.
what I mean? Like the
yes.
personality's too big. Like why the Giants would trade Odell. Because you don't have a strong enough head coach or the relationship's not strong enough that you can control a player that has that much leadership in your locker room.
Wouldn't you get nervous? Because I know neither of you guys trust Adam Gase. So if you mortgage the future, right, you mortgage next year's number one, don't you get nervous? Not that they wouldn't be a talented team, not that Joe Douglas wouldn't hit on 11 and 17 and whatever else, you know, they potentially had, but maybe Adam Gase is just, and I don't know that he's not or is, but maybe he's just not capable of putting an 11 and 5 team out there that's going to, you know, have a playoff game and that they underperform and now you're handing over something that looks very special to Jacksonville in this trade.
Well, if you forget, I mean, if I trust Greg Williams, and you saw what he did with that defense last year. So if you added, I mean, if you know, pie in the sky, this happens, and you get Yannick Ngakoue and whatever else, you get a corner, and you put that in the hands of Greg Williams, your defense is going to be good. Your defense was really good last year, and you had injuries all over the place. So you
right,
get
you
Mosley
didn't even
back.
Have Mosley the entirety of the season, or Williamson,
okay.
right.
Yep. And let's not forget, too, I mean, I love Jamal. We all love Jamal, but your GM took two safeties in the same draft, and you still have Marcus May, right? So you fill the corner position in everything else. I mean, Chris Canty thinks, and Chris Canty would know, that Bill O'Brien may be the worst head coach in the NFL right now. When you have a really good quarterback, I mean, he can make up for a lot. So if the Houston Texans can find a way to continually make the playoffs, I mean, you hope that Sam Darnold is good enough that he can overcome having what we all think isn't a very good head coach.
Yeah, but the problem is you got to make sure that the quarterback has a good relationship with the head coach, because if the quarterback, the guy that you're going to be paying over $35 million a year, doesn't like the head coach, you're probably going to find yourself another head coach, because those quarterbacks are hard to find. And I guess with the Jets situation, you recognize how valuable a commodity Sam Darnold is. You know, you hear Todd McShay telling Mike Greenberg that he has more talent than any of the quarterbacks that are going to be drafted this year or the quarterbacks that were taken last year. It's just up to whether or not the organization will support him properly. I think considering trading Jamal seriously brings into the question whether or not the organization is going to do the right things around Sam to take full advantage of what he brings to the table.
Yeah, that's kind of the one thing, too, and I know we've talked about this a bunch, that if I was a GM or I was an owner of one of these NFL teams, I mean, you kind of back yourself into a corner when you hire a head coach that's also, you know, like your offensive coordinator, because the quarterback position is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, now you're stuck in a spot where, you know, Adam Gase isn't a great head coach. He's probably a much better offensive coordinator, but now they're tied together. So, I mean, if, you know what I mean? Like it's, if Sam don't like the guy calling the plays, and the guy calling the plays is your head coach, now all of a sudden it's not as easy as just, okay, let's find a new offensive coordinator. Now you got to find a new head coach.
But you know what it is, though, Rick? Now that I'm thinking about it, I mean, when you're trying to evaluate Adam Gase, what he is as a coach in the NFL, and I'm thinking about all the different players that he's had an issue with, whether it's Jay Ajayi or Jarvis Landry or, I mean, Cam Wake, Yeah, I mean, you name it. All of these guys, Le'Veon Bell last year, Jamal Adams at the trade deadline, all of these different situations. At some point, you got to think, maybe it's not all the players. Maybe it's the head coach. And that's the thing that bothers me. That's the thing that you have to think about, because the common denominator in all of these situations in his, what, 4 years as being a head coach in the National Football League, all of the star players that he's had, well, not all, but the majority of the star players that he's had, Gase has had an issue with those guys, with him as the head coach. And I'm sorry, but a part of the job description as a head coach is to be able to get along with the stars on your team, the guys with the most talent, the guys that galvanize the locker room, players in leadership positions. The head coach has to be able to have good working relationships with those guys. If he's incapable of that, then I don't care how good he is with X's and O's. You got the wrong guy wearing the headset and having the clipboard on the sideline.
Yeah, this is a big year for the Jets. It really is. And this idea of they can, you know, casually, you know, compete but not get, I think, I don't think they have to get to the postseason, but you can't have a year like last year where you're 1-7 and then you get red hot in the second half of the season. You need to, all the way through the season, Rick, you need to be a competitive football team at a minimum.
Well, I don't disagree with you. And I mean, especially, I think it's only been ramped up because of what's going on in New England. The fact that Tom Brady's out of the division. So I think we all feel like this is our opportunity. Sam Darnold in year three. I mean, OTAs and everything else being virtual, I mean, definitely puts teams with new head coaches and young quarterbacks at a disadvantage. I mean, Sam and Adam Gase worked together last year, so they, I mean, that should be a positive. So yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, there's every reason to believe that this New York Jets team should be competing for the playoffs.
Yeah, they should be. All right, let's get to the phones. People all lined up, 800-919-3776. Let's go to our dear friend in Staten Island, and that, of course, would be Ira. Good morning, Ira. You're on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning, Dave, Rick, Chris. How are you? And I knew this was going to come up because if we weren't in this pandemic, I didn't expect Adams to show up at OTAs or voluntary stuff. And to be honest with you, I thought he'd be a training camp holdout anyway. And I kind of think the Jets, they probably should have moved him last year in October when he wasn't talking to Gase and Douglas. And then I kind of reversed. He had a good second half of the season. I thought they should have paid him. I thought they had to keep him. But it comes down to basic football business. And, Rick, you're a professional athlete. Chris, you do it. You did it. You dealt with contracts. $18 million, $17 million a year for safety makes no sense. Is he an impact player? Yes. Is he your best player? Yes. Is he a face of the organization right now? Yes. But at the end of the day, if it's going to be a problem and you don't want to put that type of money towards a safety, I fully understand trading him. If I could get a one, and I would shoot for a 1-3 because I think that's what was on the table last year that the Jets turned down. But I agree with you, Rick. If I could get a 1-4, and they have to be this year's picks. And I could take that 17th pick from the Cowboys and go get Nakagwe, you know, from the Jaguars. That's a home run because basically you're trading $18 million safety to an $18 million to $20 million pass rusher. And for that type of money, I would rather have the edge pass rusher than the safety.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ira. And here's the other thing, too, to take into account. And, Chris, I think you can speak on this as well. I mean, when you pick your college – is a lot different than when you're drafted to your professional team. You don't get a choice of where you go. And I think part of the reason why Jamal is probably frustrated is because he wants to be on a team that gives him the best chance to win. And if you're not going to be on a best, you know, on a team that gives you the best opportunity to win, on top of it, you don't have a great relationship with your head coach.
You're going to move on.
We're not even going to move on. You're not going to, there's no way you're going to make it easy on the organization to work out a deal. You're going to want exactly what you want, and you're not going to settle for anything less. Because when push comes to shove, you wouldn't be heartbroken if they do decide to move you. I mean, he'd probably be doing backflips. I know I hate to even say it, but if he got traded to Dallas and they were going to pay him what he wanted, and that's I'm sure he'd be pumped about that.
Oh, it'd be a home run because that's where he came from. He would love to go back to Dallas and play at Dallas. You know, yeah, he says he wants to stay in New York, but if he got the money and, like you said, could go back home where he grew up, to him, it's a, you know, he'd be thrilled. It's just unfortunate, but you look at the picture, and I know you brought Gase up. Listen, the history with players, I get all of that, but the bottom line here, I gotta remove my fandom. I gotta look at it business wise. If I could get the picks and get the pass rusher from the Jaguars, I'd make the deal.
Well, here's
how
the
about
thing.
If you couldn't? Here's how about if you couldn't? You couldn't figure out a way to get Ngakoue. Would you still make the deal?
It would have to go back to a 1-3. I probably, you know, push comes to shove. But, you know, if I know the guy's going to be a headache and I know I'm not going to be able to sign him long term, I would agree with Rick. I would take the 1-4. Maybe a 1-4. Give me a player. Throw in a player. You know, something like that.
All right. Thanks for the call, Ira.
I mean, here's the thing. You got to look at Jamal as more than just a safety. I mean, the guy is a playmaker. He's the best at his position in the National Football League going into his fourth year. So that has some value, and he has been a part of trying to change the culture here with the Jets. No question about it. You saw how good that defense was last year without top cornerback play and without an edge rusher. They were still a top 10 ranked group. So to me, you're seeing the returns on the investment that you made 3 years ago when you used the 6th overall pick on him. Now, you did pass on Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson in doing so, but that's not Jamal's fault. But in looking at this situation now, I don't think Jamal is out of pocket for wanting a new contract. It's just a matter of whether or not Gase and Joe Douglas believe that with their football philosophy, they can make it work paying a safety $16 million a year.
It's a lot of money for a safety. Artie in Brooklyn. Artie, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, guys. I totally agree with everything that Ira said. And I was saying that from last year when I saw this coming. I mean, as soon as the Redskins gave Landry all that money and Jamal's sitting there saying, wait a minute, I'm 100 times better than this guy, I'm going to get his money. And it doesn't work like that. You think the Texans wanted to get rid of Hopkins? No way. But the thing is that they gave him the money, and then Hopkins saw how much more money the wide receivers got, and now he wants a brand new deal. And can I blame the guys? No. But you know what? You can't be sitting there trying to make your decisions based on, you know, like you said, like the fandom and stuff like that. You got to be a realist. You're going to give money to the quarterback, the edge rusher, maybe even an offensive lineman that could help you, you know, like the offensive tackle that could protect you. Even though, look what happened. You think as soon as the Kansas City Chiefs gives Mahomes money, okay, Kansas City's not going to be the same team. But Watkins, he said, renegotiated because he wanted to stay. He didn't do the Hopkins thing and say, listen, I want my money. He could have, but he wants to be a winner. I think Jamal's the same thing. Watch him take less money to go to the Cowboys than he will for the Jets. All right, guys, thanks for the call, man.
All right, thank you, Artie. Would that pain you, Rick, if he took less money to go to the Cowboys?
Yeah, it would pain me, but I would understand it. I mean, I think that Chris...
It's probably not less money when you factor in state income tax.
No, state income tax is on top of it, too. I mean, I think we all agree that, I mean, one of the things that Jamal wants to be recognized for is being the best at his position. And I think it depends on who you ask. I don't think he gets enough credit. I don't, because he plays for the Jets. He plays for a team that doesn't win a lot of football games. If all of a sudden now on the biggest stage, he has the same kind of impact on the Dallas Cowboys that he's had on the New York Jets, he'll be recognized as the best
at
his position.
I mean, that is one of the top probably three biggest teams in the NFL, the Cowboys.
And I think that's what he wants.
But Rick, is he even a debate about whether or not Jamal Adams is the best safety in football?
No, I don't think it's much of a debate.
I don't think it's even a debate. I don't think it's close.
Well, I would say this. When Derwin James comes back and he's fully healthy, I mean, he could probably give Jamal maybe a run for his money.
We're projecting at that point.
Here, Chris, I think the point you made is a great point. It's what is Joe Douglas and Adam Gase's football philosophy? Like, how do they value the safety position? I mean, it's the same conversation we're having about what the Giants should do with the 4th overall pick, right? Isaiah Simmons is a freak athlete. And Chris, your point is, well, where do you play him? And it depends on who you ask, right? Like, how do you value a guy who doesn't really have a position? Some teams love it, and some teams are like, well, I don't really know. Like, where do I put him in base defense? So, I mean, that's what it's going to come down to. Will he be disruptive if he doesn't get his deal? Because that's the last thing Adam Gase would want.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, will he take, you know, will his contract demands be so outrageous that we can't afford to sign him? And how do we value the safety position?
Yeah, and then it becomes a matter of what you do with the assets that you bring back in that trade, because that's a part of evaluating any type of transaction as well. You know what I'm saying? Like, what do you end up doing if you do move him? What are those picks going to turn into? I mean, what is the cap space going to turn into? Those are all questions that we would have if, in fact, Joe Douglas would, you know, accept the deal next Thursday night when this draft kicks off for Jamal Adams. And I just think that when you start talking about a player like Jamal, you know what you have. You have the best safety in football going into his fourth year. That is something of tremendous value. You got to make sure that if you're moving off of him, you get back the appropriate value in return.
So Adam Schefter had a couple tweets about an hour ago, said the Jets have not expressed any official interest in extending Adams thus far in the offseason, per a source. And then a separate tweet says the Jets entertained offers for all-pro safety Jamal Adams at last year's trade deadline. Might be a name to monitor again during draft week. So we'll see. Certainly going to be a great topic for us as we move forward.
Dave, one of the things I got to put out there, Dave, you can't keep playing double dutch with one of the best players on your team. If you're an organization, you got to decide whether you're in or you're out on Jamal Adams. And if you're out, then you got to get him out the building because you recognize that most of the guys in that locker room look up to him because he's a baller.
So if you're not going to pay him, you got to move him. Doesn't that have to be by third? Like if he's on the team come next Friday morning, don't you assume he's long-term for the Jets? You'd be stupid to trade him as we move in towards the season, no?
Yeah, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen between now and the end of Thursday night.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, within 6 days, we should know whether Jamal Adams is here long-term or not, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Yes. And if you're going to keep him, if you don't end up trading him on Thursday night, then you got to go ahead and pay him.
I agree. Rick, this is very exciting.
No, it's not really exciting. I mean, it's frustrating.
It's very exciting.
No, it's very frustrating. Because, I mean, you hit on a pick. Like, I mean, this is the sixth overall pick we're talking about, and you hit on him. I mean, he's over 3 years turned into the best at his position. You'd like to keep a guy like that. But because of the circumstances, what happened last year, on top of, let's not forget, too, what initially aggravated Jamal Adams was when, rather than, you know, walk down the sideline and tell Jamal why you were taking him out of the game, you just radio over to Greg Williams to bench Jamal for taking a couple stupid penalties.
Yeah, that angered him greatly.
Of course it did.
Yeah, he was not happy about that.
Hey, how about this, though? How about this little nugget, which I think is pretty interesting? And I hate this about the new CBA in the NFL. It drives me crazy. Like, why even have the language in there that you can renegotiate after 3 years if you're never going to do it? So, since 2011, so from 2011 through 2016, okay, which is under the new CBA, under this current CBA, only 15 of the 191 first-round picks from that time got extensions after their third seasons. So 15 of 191.
Okay.
And only four of those only four of the 15 were defensive players. Aaron Donald didn't get an extension after his third year. He had to wait till after his fourth. The only ones to get the extension were J.J. Watt, the pass rusher, Quinn, pass rusher, Luke Kuechly, and Pat Peterson.
So no safeties in that mix.
No, you got a lockdown corner.
Yep.
You got, I mean,
two edge rushers and a linebacker.
Well, yeah, but Luke Kuechly was like, I mean, he's a
great linebacker.
He's the quarterback of that defense.
But that's how Jamal looks at himself. You see what I'm saying?
You're exactly right. I don't disagree with you. I just think it turns into a real volatile situation because of what happened last year.
Well, I think this is interesting from Schefter. I mean, the Jets have not expressed any official interest in extending Adams thus far this offseason.
And what you said is the most important point. If he's on this team after the draft on Thursday, you got to imagine that they're going to sign him to a deal.
You have to. Because, I mean, listen, he's a great player. But if he's unhappy, he's a guy that's going to cause a stir. And that is the last thing you want heading into this year, is to have a miserable Jamal Adams. You can't have that. So this is decision time for the Jets in the next 6 days. You either need to say, you know what, it's not worth it. We don't want to pay him. We want to get value for him in return. Let's deal him, which I'm okay with. And I think might even be the right way to go. Or you have to sign him to a long-term deal.
Completely agree, Dave. There is no middle ground with this situation. This is a very black and white, you know, conversation that Jamal and the New York Jets are going to have. If they're going to pay him what he wants on a contract extension, great. If you're not going to pay him, go ahead and trade him and try to get back a haul in order to get the players that Adam Gase puts a premium on.
Let's go to Dave in East Meadow. Dave, you're on 98.7.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Enjoying the show thoroughly.
Appreciate it, Dave.
I'm really focused on the NFL draft. I am so happy. Kudos to the NFL for doing it because it's like the only socially distanced type of activity we can all have in our lives right now. Saying that, with regard to the Jets, I'm a big Jet fan. Number one, I want to extend Jamal Adams. I mean, you should have seen Greeny's face this morning on ESPN. I mean, that was my face. Like, let's, as soon as we can, put this to bed. We're not going to rip up his contract. We're going to give him an extension and keep him happy. I mean, I heard the other day you said he's a culture changer. And that's how I feel. You need leaders. You need dogs in that locker room in any sport. that are going to lead the way. And he's always been known to actively recruit at the Pro Bowl as well. So we want to lock him up. With the draft, round one.
What is happening in your house, Dave?
Yeah, that's my son. I'm going to move on.
Okay.
Round one in the draft, I really want to get one of those tackles. If it's not available, then maybe we trade down. But, you know, I'm not Kuiper, I'm not McShay. But everybody says this is a wide receiver draft, so let's hold off on that. The only caveat I'll throw in is if you can get Trent Williams for maybe a 3 and maybe a 2 next year, something reasonable, then we focus on something else in the first round and maybe trade down a little bit. But we need talent, we need playmakers. Jamal has to be locked up, and then we got to fortify the offensive line. That's how I view the draft. And thank you for your time.
Yep, thanks for the call. Yeah, I never think anything is so black and white where you absolutely unequivocally have to sign him to a long-term deal. I get that that's a possibility, and I think it's a decent one. But if you get offered a haul in return and you can change the look of your team in one draft, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of leaning in that direction.
Well, let's forget about the haul part of it for a second. If you're offered a first-round pick for Jamal Adams, would you consider doing that?
Yes.
You would?
Yes.
I mean,
For two reasons, I'll tell you why. Because a first-round pick is, I mean, and I need bodies, and I need good players, and I need to fix the offensive line and add receivers there is one. And two, as great as he is, and he's great, and you say this all the time, if I'm listing the most important positions in the game, safety is way down the list.
Yes. Yeah, I'd agree with that. So, I mean, if you're not going to pay him, then you need to be able to try to ship him and get what you can in return for him. That, to me, makes more sense because, I mean, as this thing goes on, you're probably talking about him becoming less valuable because at some point teams are going to recognize that you're in a position where you've got to move him. And so I think that right now if you're the Jets – you have all the options on the table. I think you can give yourself the best opportunity to maximize the return if you decide you're going to move them in the next week or so.
Yeah, and on top of it, I think you take advantage of a team like the Cowboys who, you know, feel like, you know, they're a piece or two away from competing for a championship. I mean, I think you feed off their desperation a little bit. And on top of it, I mean, culture changer. Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you know, he's the vocal leader of that locker room, and that could go one of two ways. I mean, if he's the vocal leader that's taking the message from the head coach and bringing it to his team, that's great. That's exactly what you would want. But if, you know, he's a guy who can't stand the head coach and players look up to him, that's not really in the coach's best interest to have him around, especially if he's unhappy not being paid.
But we know that he would be.
Well, of course he would be. I mean, he was unhappy last year when they picked up the phone and answered, you know, trade calls then. And I mean, he's in a situation now, and it's smart by him because, I mean, the windfall, once we get through this pandemic and the new TV deals for the NFL are negotiated, I mean, he's going to want to get back to the table as soon as possible.
Yep.
Just smart on him.
Of course it is, and of course he should. Let's go to – we'll take one more in the NFL, and then we'll get to the NBA. Mark in the car. Mark, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to talk a little bit about Jamal Adams. I think the thing about him is that if you could get along with him, if you could work something out with him, do that. If you can't, then you got to go. But you shouldn't be happy with a first-round pick for him. Because the whole thing with the trading star all-pro players for draft picks, like, what are the chances of you getting a guy equal or close to him?
Well, I mean, I don't know if you're just looking to replace him with another safety. I mean, if you're talking about moving him and not paying him, it's because you don't believe paying a safety is how you win in today's game. That's not a position that your system dictates you use premium, you know, cap space or draft picks on. So I just think that's what it ultimately comes down to. And if you don't want to pay him, then you're going to have to move off of him. I mean, it's just that simple. But the one thing that I will say just to push back on the idea of moving a guy like Jamal is that you took him with the 6th overall pick and the guy has produced. He's become the best safety in football in 3 seasons. He's going into year 4. To me, it sends the right message to the rest of the guys in the locker room when you draft a guy and he performs, you taking care of him. I just think that's something that's of value to your general manager and your head coach as well.
I understand that, but there's also one more thing because, like, as a miserable Jets fan, I remember Leonard Williams. I remember Darren Lee. All these guys that we've gotten, like, so high up, projected to be so good, and where are they now?
Not on your team, but that's my point. I mean, you moved on from those guys because they didn't produce, at the level you thought they would when you drafted them in the first round, but Jamal Adams has. So to me, I mean, this is a part of the argument to go ahead and pay Jamal whatever he's asking, $15, $16 million a year. This would be why you would do it. It's not just for the production that you're getting on the field, but it's for all the intangibles that he represents for your organization in the locker room in terms of him being a leader, but also the message that you're sending to the rest of the players.
Here's the other thing, too, though. I think it's the risk that you run when you have the kind of, I don't want to go as strong as dysfunction. Maybe I can. I mean, because the Jets have been kind of that dysfunctional.
That's fair.
But yeah, that's fair. But I mean, you just put yourself in a tough spot because, you know, you do end up drafting Jamal Adams and he does turn into the best safety in the league. But because you're going through, I mean, you're burning through head coaches and GMs. Now, I mean, it's on the plate of a guy who didn't draft him and a coach who didn't draft him. And it's up to them to make the decision.
Right. Right. You've handed the baton to the next Jets regime and now they have to decide, which, in some way, almost makes it more organic because they're basing it purely on football, not about, like, you know, did we draft him? Is he our guy? Do we need to keep him because of that? Like, they're just saying, is it worth it to keep him to make this team better? So I think in some way it might be a little better for the Jets.
Well, it's probably better for the Jets ultimately because they're just going to, the emotional will be taken out of it. It's not great for Jamal though, because I mean, that's usually when, you know, you're probably going to get overpaid is when, you know, it's the GM that drafted you. Because there is that, I mean, there's that attachment.
But are you looking for what's best for Jamal, or as a Jets fan, are you looking what's best for your organization?
No, as a Jets fan, I'm looking for what's in my best interest, but Jamal's looking for what's in his best interest. And if I'm going to be on a team where I hate the head coach, we don't win a lot of football games, I'm not going to be, like, my demands aren't going to be reasonable. My demands are going to be what they are. I'm going to ask for as much money as possible, and if you don't want to meet those demands and keep me, I'll be a problem. And if you trade me, I'll go to a better team where I can get paid.
Okay, Rick, so you got the purse strings for the Jets. If Jamal Adams wants $16 million a year on a contract extension, are you giving it to him?
If he wants 16?
$16 million a year.
Or you have your one and your four waiting for you.
Or I'm getting a first-round pick.
Yep.
I'm getting Dallas's first-round pick.
Yep, 17.
I would take the first-round pick. They got to find a way to get the best out of Sam Darnold. That's really what they have to do. And
there you go.
as much as I love Jamal too, I mean, if I could find a way to get another corner, and there's some debate on who I think Okuda's the best corner, but there are some people that like CJ Henderson a lot too. I mean, at the moment, I would probably want as much flexibility as possible for Joe Douglas.
If I told you, and I don't know that this is 100% fair, but if I told you it's going to turn into Henry Ruggs and an offensive lineman in the fourth round.
Yeah, if at 11 I'm taking a tackle, and at 17 I'm taking Ruggs.
You're getting Becked in at 11, mm-hmm. Ruggs at 17, and a guard in the fourth round.
Yeah, I would take it. You still have your second round. I mean, you still have your second round pick, and you got that early third round pick from the Giants.
You're just going to mention that as much as you can, right?
As much as humanly possible.
Yes, yeah, no, I know.
It's funny when
I hope that guy's the biggest bust in the history of the NFL.
It's funny is when he asked, when the last call asked, where's Leonard Williams? He's just across the hall.
I hope that guy doesn't make the team, really.
With the Giants.
Yeah, it's great. I'm glad that it's the little things that really move the needle for you, isn't it?
I still can't believe it. It's almost surreal to me still. I can't believe it happened. I can't believe it actually happened.
With Gettleman, anything can happen.
Yeah, he's like the Kevin Garnett.
Yeah, but that's not in a good way, though, Dave.
No, except trading back, apparently. Yeah, otherwise, anything can happen. All right, now I'm in a bad mood. All right, Brian Windhorst.
I love his war room, though, right behind his couch, the little desk right behind his couch.
He's got like a huge notebook filled with papers. He has a big bottle of lotion. I don't know if you saw.
In case he really likes the pick.
And it's just a little computer. And they show like other GMs who have, you know, these unbelievable setups. And this guy has, you know, papers strewn across the table with a huge binder, a thing of lotion. Oh my God. You can't make it up.
That's what happens. You fall in full bloom love with your fourth overall pick. You're going to need some lotion handy.
Well, he said they're never going to pick as high as two again. And he's been very accurate in that assessment, because they've gone six and now four. All right.
Well, he's a lot of high picks. What were his last two picks in Carolina? What was his pick before McCaffrey? McCaffrey was what, 8?
Yeah, McCaffrey was 8. I want to say Shaq Thompson. I think McCaffrey is in between Shaq Thompson and Vernon Butler.
Some high picks.
That's not exactly a home run.
Not a ringing endorsement?
No.
Well, what do you guys want me to say?
Well, you didn't do anything wrong.
I didn't do it. I wasn't making the pick.
No one is blaming you. All right, let's see. We got it. So 15 was Shaq Thompson, Devin Funchess, Darrell Williams, David Mayo, and Cameron Artis Payne.
Yep.
Then the next year
16 was Butler and then Bradbury in the second round.
And then Worley, Sanchez, and Sandland. And then it was McCaffrey, Samuel. Samuel's a good second-round pick. Moten, Deshaun Hall, Corn Elder, Alex Arma, and Harrison Butker. Butker was a good pick in the seventh round. So, yeah, not exactly tons of home runs there.
That's who's at the hell to the helm for the New York Giants going through the draft.
We got to hear from Windhorst, if for no other reason, just to change the conversation.
Windhorst at sea!
Yes, thank you, Rosenberg. So, Brian Windhorst was on the
It's funny every time, though. It's funny every time.
There are certain things that you hear that never get old. That would be one of those.
Windhorst in space!
Do you appreciate him at sea better or in space better?
I like him at sea.
I like both.
I like him at sea.
I like him at sea, yes,
at all. Yeah, I like him at sea.
Well, because that's the original, right?
Yeah, that's where when it first started, yeah, at sea.
Right. Windhorst at sea. Now, where did that come from?
I think Peter was watching. I think they were doing the show, and then Windy was doing a spot on whatever show it was, and just like the camera angle, like how they had it shot, it looked like he was floating, floating at sea. So he went with Windhorst at sea.
He didn't just go with it. He turned it into a song.
Hilarious, though.
Well, it's sensational. It's sensational. All right. So here is Windhorst at sea or space or wherever you want to consider him at the moment. He was on the Hoop Collective discussing the Knicks' interest in Tom Thibodeau as their next head coach.
Thibodeau, I believe, is going to be a candidate for the Knicks' job as well. He has been long represented by CAA, who Leon Rose ran the CAA basketball division, and Wes Wesley was one of his first clients, I believe, was Tom Thibodeau. When he became a coaching agent about a decade ago or whatever it was. He's got a real good working relationship with Leon Rose and Wes Wesley. I know Wes hasn't been named anything official with the Knicks, but trust me, he will be heavily involved.
So how would you feel about Tom Thibodeau as the next head coach of the New York Knicks, Rick?
I like Tibbs. I think Wendy goes on to say, I don't know if we have the clip though. They asked Paul Pierce, who's actually been coached by Tibbs, and then... Do you have that clip, Santy, about Wendy said afterwards about Tibbs?
The issue is if you're going to go with Tom Thibodeau as coach, you're going to have to retrofit your entire roster to get Tom Thibodeau-style players on there. He's not the type of guy who can come in and coach, 12 guys that you give him. And we learned that in Minnesota when he couldn't get guys like Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins to play the style that he needed, so much so that he had to go out and trade for Jimmy Butler and sign Taj Gibson and do stuff like that. So if you commit to Tibbs, it's a huge commitment across your whole roster.
That concerns me a little bit.
Well, you know what should concern you is of the three or four huge names that we've heard thrown out there that the Knicks would be interested in, Karl-Anthony Towns is a huge guy that we have heard discussed. Mm-hmm. And now that's going to – I mean, how could you possibly do that if you're going to bring in Thibodeau?
Well, I don't think you could.
Right.
I mean, and the fact remains, too. I mean, you got a young team, and if all of a sudden now we have to go out and try to retrofit the roster to get the best out of our head coach, I don't know if that's – that's necessarily something that that kind of undertaking is what we want to get ourselves involved in.
No, that's not what you want, man. Your coach should be able to adapt his scheme to fit whatever personnel that he has. It shouldn't be about the X's and O's. It should be about the Jessies and Joes. If you're Tibbs, a veteran NFL coach, you have to be willing to come in here and evaluate what the Knicks have currently, what they have the potential to acquire with all of the picks that they have, and people that would be potentially interested in coming. And then develop whatever, basketball philosophy that you want implemented going forward. I don't think that you try to make this team something that it's not. I think that's where you get in trouble as a coach and as an organization.
The other thing too, Dave, that, Paul Pierce said, and he was coached by Tibbs, is that he doesn't necessarily know. And if the Knicks, if Leon Rose moving forward because of his connections, you know, representing players. Like, one of the goals here is at some point to get a disgruntled, you know, young star. Paul Pierce made the point that he doesn't know if Tibbs is that relatable to today's athlete, today's young player. So, I mean, that I wouldn't want that. Like, if all of a sudden now the New York Knicks become an attractive place because of the relationship the players have with Leon Rose, but they don't want to come because they don't really feel comfortable with the head coach. I mean, I don't want to get stuck in that kind of situation.
But isn't that the due diligence you have to do now? Like, before you hire him, don't you need to, you know, send feelers and flyers out all around the league that if we have Tom Thibodeau, what's the idea with him? If we have this guy, what's the thought of him? Like, there's no way you can be caught off guard hiring, you know, Thibs and then thinking that there are some guys around the league that are not interested in playing for him.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to make that hire as your coach, then why did you hire Leon Rose to be your team president? You know what I'm saying? You would have went after somebody that's already had experience working in an NBA front office, because that would suggest if you're going with Tibbs as your coach, you are going to draft and develop players. It's not like you're going to go out there and recruit guys to come to the Knicks if they know that they don't want to play for a guy like Tibbs. So, I mean, that's the part of it where you just wish you got some consistency from the messaging that the Knicks are sending with the decisions that they're making about who's going to be leading the organization. To me, if you get Leon Rose, you're probably looking at getting a head coach, yeah, that can develop young players, but also a head coach that has good relationships with guys around the league.
Yeah, but listen to, I mean, when you listen to the first part of that clip from Wendy, and this is, I think we saw this with the Mets in Brody Van Wagenen. I mean, he's signing almost, I mean, exclusively the guys that were represented by his agency. The reason why he would hire Tom Thibodeau is because of his previous relationship.
I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't make. I get that, Rick. That I get what you're saying, but how does that make sense in terms of adding the talent to make this team better? If there are young guys that are in other situations around the league that are unhappy, I don't think that they're going to be clamoring to sign up to play for Thibodeau.
No, listen, I don't either. But I can understand. Like, it's almost why you would argue against not hiring. I mean, why you would argue against hiring somebody that's never done the job before, that's only been an agent. Because if you don't really know what you're doing, like, if you've never done it before, you're gonna rely heavily on people that you trust. And he trusts Thibs. And I'm sure they've had conversations. Like, I mean, you know, hey, just so you know, wouldn't it be great if I ever became a GM? I would definitely hire you as my head coach.
But I guess the question then becomes, Rick, does Leon Rose have strong enough relationships with players where he can get them to see past Thibodeau being their head coach?
I can't answer that. I mean, I would hope so, but I couldn't answer that.
I don't love the idea.
Well, if you make Tibbs the head coach, then you have to believe that Leon Rose has got the answer, and it has to be that players would be willing to come to the Knicks, right? Like, that's the only way that you could potentially go down that road and actually make Tibbs the hire, isn't it?
Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, I would hope that would be the rationale behind it, would be that, you know, he's already done his due diligence. He realizes that, you know, the players that they'd be looking at would be fine with Tibbs being the head coach. Because otherwise, I mean, otherwise now all of a sudden you're talking about, you know, a much longer process to get back to being competitive.
Agreed.
We don't know how long it's going to take with this team.
No, you have no idea. And you don't have any idea. I mean, do you have much of an idea of how the players that you do have will respond to a coach like Thibs?
No. No.
I really only care about how two players are going to respond to a guy like Thibs.
Which is, yep, what, Barrett and Robinson?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. The other guy, can take it or leave.
I can't imagine
Julius Randle.
Thibs and Julius Randle will get along too well.
Do the spin thing again. go till him. Just, yeah, right?
You have to ask the trainer for Dramamine watching him play. Hey, give me some anti-nausea, please.
I'm dizzy.
I'm watch this guy spin around.
I can't
handle spinning, it. It's spinning.
Put him in the close cycle again. Oh, God. Today on ESPN Daily, Michael Jordan's final Bulls championship was a huge moment. As the Last Dance docuseries on that 97-98 season premieres Sunday, Michael Wilbon shares his memories of MJ and the meaning of the Bulls' legacy. That's on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. Go to Jack in Hackensack. Jack, you're next up on 98.7.
Good morning, guys. I'm a little emotional. From the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you guys I work in Englewood Hospital in New Jersey. It's been a rough month, as you guys know. But in our locker rooms, in our lunchrooms, on our radios, we listen to you guys. Thank you for keeping it real, for keeping it light, for giving us hope for football and for everything else. Other than that, Adams is the Lawrence Taylor of the Jets. We need to keep him. He's our heart. Believe me, it would be like the Giants trading Lawrence Taylor. The Jet fans just don't. They want to keep Adams. And, Chris, you're right. We got to pay him. But I love you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. I mean, your call, honestly, it completely makes my day. The fact that the people that are on the front lines of this awful illness and disease are listening to us in the lunchroom, and it brings him to such emotion. I mean, I don't know what else to say, but thank you, and I'm glad we can be here and do this for you.
No, there's no way that we can thank them enough for what they're doing, Dave. The doctors, the nurses, all of the people that are in the medical profession being on the front lines, they're putting themselves in harm's way in order to try to flatten this curve and get us to the other side of this thing so we can get back to the sense of normalcy that we're used to sooner rather than later. But, I mean, I've actually been in that hospital in Englewood, New Jersey, so a special shout-out to all the folks over there. They took good care of me, and I know that they're doing right by all the patients that are there now.
You know what, fellas, though? It's a phone call like that, and that could be my favorite phone call that we've ever had on the show. But it's a phone call like that and that kind of emotion with someone that's on the front lines that when I hear professional athletes complain about being in a hotel or whatever it is, it drives me crazy. Because, I mean, it's not everybody. I mean, not everybody is a sports fan, but there is a huge amount of people in this country, especially, you know, people in this country that are on the front lines, that are sports fans, that would love to have the distraction of live sports.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. So if you can figure out a way to safely bring it back and not put people in harm's way, I mean, it's important for this country.
Yeah, but I guess my point is I understand that you're going to be inconvenienced. Like Mike Trout yesterday, it's going to be an inconvenience. There are going to be things that you're going to have to agree to that you don't want to do. You know, being stuck in a hotel maybe isn't something that you really that interested in doing. But I mean, if you kind of take a step back for a quick second and realize, you know, that there are people like that last call that are on the front lines that have to deal with this every single day of their lives, putting themselves in harm's way to save people, and just listening to sports talk radio brightens up their day. Could you imagine what a live sport, like what a live baseball game would do for them?
No. No, I mean, it gives you something.
Doing, it's part of you doing, like, you doing your part to help. Mm-hmm. We can't, like, I'm not a doctor. I can't, you know, I can't just jump into, you know, an emergency room or an ICU and start, you know, testing people or putting people on. I have no idea how to do that. Like, try to find any little things that you can do to try to be as much of a help as humanly possible. And if that means being stuck in a hotel room for a couple months,
so be it.
Being awake,
so be it.
Don't get me started.
You're not being unreasonable, Rick. You're not. I mean, you got to have some awareness about what we're dealing with and recognize that it's not just about you in this type of situation. We're all in this together, and we all got a part to play. Do what you can do. We're going to keep putting on the best radio show we can do on these airwaves from 10 to 1. Mike Trout, guys around baseball, we understand you might be inconvenienced a little bit, but do your part in order to try to get us back to some normalcy. Go out there and play a game you love.
All right. So, scalding, steamy, hot take, Rick, the floor is yours.
All right, here we go. So I was going to go entertainment, but it was probably too spicy, too steamy. Could get people in trouble, so I backed off of that one. So we'll stay away from that one. We'll go NFL. This is a steamy NFL take.
Steamy NFL take. All right, Chris, let's do this. Let's end the week on a very high note. Does this involve a team?
Yes.
What?
Well, it could be player.
Terrible but question, but yes.
It's a good question.
It's an NFL question. Does it involve a team?
Imagine my madness.
All right, okay. Is it related to the NFL draft?
No.
Is it a team that's in the NFC?
Yes.
Okay. So we're down to 16 NFC, not draft related. Chris, you're up.
Is it an NFC East team?
No.
No. He loves the South. Is it an NFC South team?
Yes.
Yes. So transparent. All right.
He does love the South, doesn't he?
I do like the South.
He's obsessed with the South.
Where else can you drive around and see somebody on an electric scooter pulling a baby carriage. You nowhere.
No. Like the South.
All right. Does it involve the Atlanta Falcons?
No.
There's two teams that he loves in the South. It's not going to be the Rams. Not the Rams. It's not going to be the Panthers because he loves you. I know you so well. He loves Tampa and he loves New Orleans.
Oh, I know what it's got to be related to. I know it now.
All right, so talk it out. Let's go. Where do you think it is,
Rick? Is it related to one O.J. Howard?
He's involved.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. So obviously it's the Buccaneers. I mean, you want the Bucs to inquire and or make a deal for Gronk.
You're correct, Dave. That is
there
100%.
It is!
Nicely done, Roethlisberg! Nice!
There it is.
Look at you, Dave.
No, that was us. We systematically just drove right through everything exactly where we needed to get to.
Yeah,
that was
did.
One of our finest moments during that segment.
Yeah, we were connected, Dave. We were there. We were there.
Sensational job by us. Really,
you guys
really
chipped
well
away
done.
At that real quick.
Yeah.
Real quick.
A lot of chipping. O.J. Howard gets involved. Gronk. Oh, it was beautifully done.
I'm surprised that O.J. Howard wasn't able to be more productive in Bruce Arians' system, though. I'm surprised he hadn't been able to make that work.
Yeah, especially when the quarterback threw for 5,000 yards last year.
Well, B.A. makes it work with everybody, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's known for. He's an offensive guru. You haven't met a coach or a player that has anything negative to say about it.
No, it's
O.J. Howard seems O.J. Howard seems like the perfect kind of tight end, though, for Bill Belichick.
Oh, he would love him.
Alabama kid. Good with the run game. I would love it. It's a selfish take, though, because I would love to see Gronk get back in the
with
NFL.
Tom Brady down there.
I would love to see.
Loves
that.
Brady.
He can get a little extra wild because it's be a new, you know, eased up with the coaching staff, more of his personality coming out on the field. Ugh. Maybe he has the 24/7 championship with him as he's playing, and then all of a sudden,
right, exactly.
Out of nowhere,
a multi-sport athlete now, Grant.
Right?
Somebody pins him after he tackles his three count.
Then they want the belt.
That would be a cool touchdown celebration, though, right? Pin one of your teammates.
No, it'd be hilarious.
Yeah, you could see that.
Yeah.
He's a fun guy.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so there you have it. So we go back around, we have my hot take on Monday, just 3 days prior to the NFL draft. So that'll be interesting. All right, are you ready to go here with observations?
I'm ready, buddy.
All right, Santi, if you will.
Do you need to feel better about your life?
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
And totally redeem yourself!
Let's take a look at Rick's Knobservation.
Welcome back, dum-dum.
Could I just mention quickly, speaking of Knobservations and
yeah, you have plenty of
Knobservating,
time.
You know who aggravates me, in all honesty?
Who aggravates you? Is it an athlete?
No, it's a team. It's just in general. Like, the New York Mets drive me crazy. We can't get anyone on ever. You're in a situation where all these guys are at home. I got Jeff McNeil on SportsCenter. Like, you'd think that they would try to get their guys, I mean, just to keep the sport a little bit relevant. You know what I mean? Like, you pick up the phone and call. Like, hey, you guys want him? You want him?
Wouldn't
I mean, the
sense.
Guys aren't doing anything anyway.
And they're all doing charitable things. Like, we could have them on, promote what they're doing, talk sports with them.
Just see what they're up to. I mean, the
right.
fans just want to know, like, what are you up to? Like, well, I mean, are you training? How's things going? Is everyone, you know? Aggravates me.
It's frustrating.
All right, here we go. We're going to start with a good story. So yesterday I mentioned the All-In Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So did you take a peek at it?
Not only did I look, but I saw that Roger Goodell got involved today.
He did.
Yeah, a lot of people getting involved. So let's go over some of the stuff we talked about yesterday. Because there are some of the experiences that are auction items,
right,
as opposed to you buy, like for $10 you can buy 10 chances. So here we go. I'm going to give you three separate auction items.
Mm-hmm.
You tell me in order what you think so far is going for the most amount of money. You ready?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So we have golf and dinner with Peyton Manning in your hometown.
Golf and dinner, Peyton. Okay.
Okay. We have the Tampa Bay home opener, game jersey, and dinner with Tom Brady.
Well, that's got to be big.
And we got Meek Mill's 2018 Rolls-Royce Phantom. Which of those three do you think is the most currently?
All right.
I'm going to say Phantom.
I'm going to go with Meek Mill as well.
The Phantom.
Yeah.
You guys go with Meek Mill.
I'll power rank them for you. I'm going to go Meek Mill.
Yes, please.
Brady, Peyton.
What about you, CeCe? Meek Mill one, what's two?
I would probably say, I would actually go Peyton and Brady.
Canty is correct. Meek Mill's 2018 Rolls-Royce Phantom, the current bid is $320,000.
Wow.
Golf and dinner with Peyton in your hometown is $260,000.
Mm-hmm.
And the home opener with Tom Brady is $140,000.
That surprises me.
Why is that?
And you go out to dinner with Tom after the game?
Yeah, and dinner with Brady, yeah.
But you spend more time with Peyton, though, Dave. Think about it. You play a round of golf, you and two of your buddies, and then you go to dinner with Peyton after that, and you can invite up to 10 people at that gathering.
It's a valid point. Yeah. It's a valid point.
But so I'm all day with Peyton Manning.
You're right. It's a good point. I'm experiencing the game, right there with Tom Brady, then going out to I don't know. I would think that someone would pony up more for that. And what did you say?
Well, maybe Tom Brady's just too intimidating for people.
That's possible.
Yeah.
Do you think Giselle would go to the dinner as well?
Probably not.
No.
No, it depends on what happens if he loses, and then all of a sudden he's in a bad mood. Now dinner's ruined.
Yeah, you know it's not going to be a great dessert. All you're going to have is avocado ice cream.
That's right.
You know. For
appetizers, you have your choice of avocado dishes. For the main course, you have your choice of avocado dishes.
It just sounds like it's more fun to be on a golf course having beers with Peyton Manning.
It's possible.
100%.
Yeah.
Can't have nightshade vegetables. Eli Manning's Super Bowl MVP Corvette. Would you care to guess what that's currently going for?
I'm going to guess $110,000.
Canty's looking at the list. Yes, $110,000.
No, I'm not. I promise you I'm not.
You just guessed it like that?
I witnessed that, can tell you, from a reasonably safe distance, that I'm not looking at the list.
So you just randomly guess the exact number of what the bid is at?
Yes.
Well, you're a genius.
It's special. And Dave, also the one that you would love, flip the coin as honorary New York Giants captain and dinner with Eli Manning, $16,000 currently.
I should bid on that.
You should have Sherry get that for you. That'd be a nice little gift. That's like a bucket list gift for you.
$16,000? Like that's, I mean, it's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
No. But it's not hundreds of thousands of dollars, which we, like, that's pretty
cool. But Dave, have $16,000 that you can just,
no.
Hey, I can toss this at this experience?
No. My wife would probably leave me if I did that. I'm just saying, like that's, it's within reason. Like hundreds of thousands of dollars that's something we
yeah,
just
you're not getting
do.
Meek Mill's 2018 Phantom. We
no,
got it.
Like there's zero, like, to, what is it? You flip the coin and then you go out to dinner with Eli?
Yeah. You're the team captain. You don't just flip the coin. Honorary team captain.
I'm the team captain.
Exactly. Chris, right.
You get to choose whether or not they receive or defer?
Yeah, I'm sure you could work that in. For Dave, they like,
because for Dave, that might actually be worth
it. Can you imagine that?
He might go all in with that one.
I'll be right there with Joe Judge. Oh, that'd be terrific.
Yeah. Talk to Aldrich Rosas, see which way the wind is blowing.
That's right.
which end do you prefer?
If Parcells used to leave the doors open on either end of the stadium. We would get that involved. Oh. Diabolical.
Here's the other one that's I thought was a little bit disrespectful. You get to sit in the draft war room with Allen Houston and the Knicks.
That's my Giants dream.
Yeah, but that's only going for $6,000. You get to sit in the war room. I mean, that's an unbelievable.
It really is.
That is an unbelievable experience, yeah.
For $6,000?
$6,000.
I think the Knicks would let you make the pick.
I wonder if you did double it, would they allow you to make it?
Yeah. If I give a flat $25,000 right now, can I choose who the Knicks take?
The ultimate NYC experience with Gail King is going for more right now than sitting in the draft war room with the Knicks.
Oh, my goodness. Here's one that I think you would love. A Georgia tailgate and game day with Todd Gurley.
See, why do you got to do that? Because then that would be a fistfight.
I love you, Dave. I love you for doing that.
Now we'd have to have a fist fight. Here's the other thing too. If you're gonna offer something, then offer. Why is it that the Dodgers are offering? It's not just play a softball game. It's play a 7-inning softball game. We can't get 9 innings. I mean, what are we talking about here? Why is it only 7 innings?
Do you really need to play a 9-inning softball game?
I want the opportunity to play 9 innings.
Now, would you take the green lights out there and play against them, or how would you do that?
100%. That'd be a full team event. Little cross country trip.
I don't know. I might put my money on Mookie Betts and Cody Bellinger. Just saying.
Gas up the RV.
If Mookie Betts we're not still playing a member of the Dodgers.
Hold on, are we playing against them? Yeah. Is it playing against them?
Yeah.
No, it's not playing against them. It's at the stadium.
Oh.
Oh, okay. You couldn't get those guys involved?
No, you don't get to play them. You just get to play in their stadium.
Will they even be there?
No, it just says play a 7-inning game at Dodger Stadium. So you got to get your own people? Yeah, you get to just play whoever you want.
You're playing a pickup softball game in Dodger Stadium.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct. All right, here we go. Did this happen in Florida? Dave, I'm going to ask that you're going to have to see this video after I tell you the story.
Okay.
Because you won't believe it when I tell you. Animal rights activists are up in arms currently because a zoo in wherever the story is from, maybe Florida, who knows? Mm-hmm. That's why I'm asking the question, decided that it was going to be a good idea to dress up one of the monkeys in shorts, a Hawaiian shirt, a mask, and then have the monkey ride a bicycle and sanitize the facility from the coronavirus.
After we get this, you got to tell me where this video is.
The monkey is wearing denim shorts, a surgical mask, an orange Hawaiian shirt, pedaling a kid's bike with a disinfectant tank strapped to its back.
Everybody has time. Right?
And the excuse is we clean the place 2 or 3 times a week in case they let us reopen. So we just thought that the chimp needed some exercise and just let him go out and stretch his limbs a little bit during this inactive period.
Oh, that's sensational.
Wow.
That is a terrific story. I'm going to say this not Florida.
Not Florida. How about you, Canty, Florida?
I'm going Florida, man. That sounds ridiculous.
Santy, Florida?
I could go either way with it. Zoo, I'll say not Florida.
I feel like you're a denim shorts kind of guy. I feel like you wear quite a few denim shorts in your career.
Back in the day, oh yeah.
Oh, 100%. You're definitely a denim shorts guy.
The jorts?
The jorts? Little cutoffs? No, that's actually, Dave is correct. That is not Florida. That is in a zoo near Bangkok.
Oh, not even this country.
Not even this country.
Nice. All right, where can I find this video?
You want to Google Thai zoo forces chimp to ride bike.
Thai zoo,
yeah.
Chimp.
Wait till you see the video.
Bike. I mean,
it's almost ridiculous. Like, you won't even believe it. While you're looking at that, here's another one. The reason I'm going to tell you this story is because, luckily no one was hurt during the story. Did this happen in Florida? Because it could. You never know.
Okay.
A 64-year-old man was given a gift by his coworkers, and the gift was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to fly in a fighter jet. To fly in the fighter jet. Nervous at first. I mean, 64 years old. Never has ever in his life flown in a fighter jet. Just so people know, there is 3.7 grams of force generated by the takeoff alone. Alone. So you're talking, ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So before the flight, he's already at 145 beats per minute, his heart. Like, he's just nervous.
Of course.
What does he decide to do? He freaks out a little bit. So as they take off, they're 1,300 feet in the air.
Oh no! He passes out.
Did he do it?
No, he accidentally ejects himself from the jet.
Is that accidental, or did he just decide it was too much for him?
He started freaking out, and he stood up, and he went to grab. He didn't know what he was grabbing, and he stood up.
He can't stand.
Are you strapped down?
Yeah, he's getting all jittery, like he didn't know what the hell was going on. So he grabs. He grabs the lever and ejects himself from the jet.
Did he live?
Yeah, it's 1,300 feet, but once he ejects himself, the parachute comes out, so he had a relatively soft landing. But yeah, he shot himself right out of the jet.
I can't believe he didn't have a heart attack and die. I would have a heart attack and die.
Well, that everyone was concerned about that. Like, he should not have been in that situation.
Of course not.
But he felt uncomfortable saying no.
Yeah, but if you're not absolutely sure that you want to do it, then why would you get in the cockpit?
Because it was a gift, I guess. You didn't want to say no.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Can you imagine accidentally, at the moment that you're about to be ejected from the... I mean, this guy must have...
I would have more respect for him if it was intentional, if he just got up there and was like, you know what, I'm all set.
Okay, so here's what happens, though. This is what happens, to answer your question. So he actually works for a defense company. So they give him, so as, you know, part of, they give him the gift to fly in the jet. So because there was so much force at takeoff, it made him float up off of his seat. So he floats up off his seat, causing him to kind of stand, like, I don't know if I would say stand up, but kind of sit forward. And then accidentally he grabbed the ejection handle to steady himself and then shot himself out of the jet.
That is unbelievable.
is that a, did it happen in Florida?
Yeah, did that happen in Florida? I just love the story. Did that happen in Florida?
No, no. That can't, there's no way. There's no way that they would allow that to happen in Florida now.
How do you know? Well, not now. That's a good point. Canty, Florida?
Well, the way you just responded to what Dave said would lead me to believe that it's not Florida.
Yeah, you're always listening. Santiago, you are into prematurely.
I'm going to abstain because I already know the answer to this one. At least the guy didn't end up like Goose.
Good point. This was France. This was France.
Of course it was.
We come from France.
And they're defensive.
And there you have it. That is a Friday edition.
Oh, lovely.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.